Hello, everyone, and welcome back to It's Okay to Love Yourself, a self-love podcast with me, Catherine Yazzie, your host. And it's Friday. It's another week. We're officially in March. And I just wanted to come on and touch base with you all before we get into today's episode and today's conversation with the lovely Terry Kozlowski. Her and I connected back in February, and it was really wonderful to get to know Terry and hear her story. She has just a wealth of knowledge to share around overcoming childhood trauma, definitely content warning and trigger warning for folks around themes of sexual assault and abuse, and just want to put that out there at the beginning here in case this is not something that you are interested in or in the headspace to listen to at this time. But like I said, Terry shares a lot, not only about her personal story and what she went through, but also how she healed from her experiences and how at different points in her life she turned to different things like therapy, learning about reframing, learning how to work with her ego. And she just has so much good information and insight that I'm excited for you all to hear this conversation and be able to learn from Terry. I know I certainly learned a lot and had moments where, things came full circle for me, like things that I've been thinking about or reading about. So I know that you're going to really enjoy hearing from her. And again, her story is just really inspiring in terms of, giving people the hope that no matter what you've been through, you can heal from it and you can learn to see things differently. So without further ado, I will stop talking and I hope you have a wonderful weekend. And we'll be back again next week with a new episode. But for now, let's get into this week's episode. Well, welcome back to It's Okay to Love Yourself. I am joined by the lovely Terry Kozlowski. Hi, Terry. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Catherine. I'm glad to be here today.
So we spoke, I think, last week. Time is flying this month, but I'm really excited to hear your story. And for those who are listening and who haven't met you before, I'd love for you just to start off telling us a little bit about yourself and about your background.
The reason that I'm here, because loving ourselves can be very, very difficult, especially if you've had any sort of trauma in your background. And that's exactly where I come from. At the age of 11, I was sexually abused and abandoned by my mother. So my mother allowed three men to rape me so that she could have drugs. And then she left my sister and I alone for 4 days before she showed up and then literally put us on the streets of Albuquerque, New Mexico, 3,000 miles away from where I lived. So I had to get us home. So when we have that sort of trauma in our background, figuring out that it's okay to love ourselves is really, really difficult. Because if mommy couldn't love me, how can anybody else love me? If mommy wasn't going to protect me, why would I trust anybody else on the planet to try to protect me? So those become core fears that I ended up having to struggle through. And it took me a long time to realize that ultimately I was not at fault. There was nothing I could have done to have prevented it. And the issue wasn't ever with me. It was with my mother. Mm-hmm. But it takes a long time for an 11-year-old who doesn't understand what happened, doesn't have the wherewithal to even figure out what to do. And the amazing thing was, I was a very aware child. I was a very awakened individual. And I think all children are. I think my belief is that we are born in this planet and we know exactly who we are and what our purpose is. And we know who we authentically are. But then we go through what I call the domestication process. And through this domestication, our parents and our families and other people in our lives tell us what we need to be. Well, you don't want to grow up to do that. You want to do this. Oh no, you need to be a good girl. You know, you're not going to climb around on the rocks. You need to be a good girl. And so these are the things that then we conform to. And then heaven forbid we get into peer pressure. That's a whole other avenue of conformity that we go through. Mm-hmm. So we spend the first 10 years of our lives being authentically ourselves. The next 10 years of our lives, a major domestication process where we're conforming to all that we are supposed to be. And then we spend 20 years of our life struggling with being unhappy because we're not who we authentically are. And then we have an awakening that, I'm going to figure this out. I'm going to find out why I'm unhappy. And then we start down the road to remembering who we authentically are and then becoming that, taking off the armor, taking off the mask.
Yeah. And I think, you know, first of all, I just want to say, I'm sorry that you had to go through all of that trauma. And, you know, I can't even imagine, like you mentioned, just being 11 and not even really understanding what happened. And, you know, I think in our first conversation, you talked about, you know, feeling like you had to take care of your sister and just like the family component of that. And to your point, if my own like caretakers, my mom can't even show this love for me, like, where can I find this? Like, how can I show this love to myself? And I'm wondering, what was, you know, and you talked about kind of the phases of your life where you like know who you are, you're a kid and you just, you don't know any different, but then you start to consider other people's opinions and take those things on because you think that's what you should do. Like, what was like, it sounds like that moment for you when you were 11 was a huge turning point for you. Like, how did you change? Do you remember sort of the before and after, like what your outlook on life was like, or just how did you cope with those traumatic things happening at such a young age?
Well, after the trauma occurred, I did come back. And like I said, I was an aware child. I got off the airplane and asked my dad to take me to therapy. Mm. Now, this is in the early 80s. So 11-year-old doesn't know what therapy is. Okay.
Right.
Number one. And right. Number two, sexual trauma in the early 80s was not something for children that was dealt with. So how I had to maneuver through that, I knew enough that this was big. I knew enough I couldn't handle it alone, but I didn't know what else to do. I asked for help, but I don't necessarily think that the help I truly needed is something I received through the therapy, because we never really talked about the rape. We talked a little bit about the abandonment. Mm-hmm. The main issues we talked about was my new family. My dad had remarried and I had siblings, step siblings. So this new blended family was what we talked about. But over the long haul, the main thing that I noticed was this very self-independent child became very withdrawn. And I turned inward, which is a very, very bad thing for people in trauma to do, is to go inward. Because when you go inward, the one thing that happens is the egoic mind starts to take over. Mm. The egoic mind can be a good thing, but most of the time in a traumatic event, it's a bad thing, because what it does and what it's supposed to do are two slightly different. The ego is supposed to tell us, hey, watch out, there's a bear over there. You're picking berries, there's a bear over there, we need to get out of the woods. But in today's modern society, those types of dangers are almost non-existent. So instead, the ego is now telling us different things like, hey, that guy made a negative comment about you in the meeting last week. You need to stay away from him. That is not something that really is a fight or flight response, which is what the ego is meant to do. So what ended up happening was my ego really told me everybody on the planet was unsafe. Mm. Because if I can't be safe with my mother, I can't be safe with anybody. Now, for some reason, I did not associate that with my father. Mm-hmm. I never once thought my dad was unsafe to be around, which I find very interesting looking back. Somehow my ego left my dad out of it completely. So I go through this process where I'm going inside, I'm getting very quiet, I'm isolating myself, which is the other thing that people in trauma and people who feel unloved do is they isolate, which is absolutely the worst thing that can be done because of two things. Number one, our brains are wired for connection. Mm-hmm. So the moment we start connecting with others, even an animal, so a pet, you can connect with a pet. When you start doing that, it actually brings your dopamine levels up and your body starts to feel better and you start coming out of the depression. So I got very depressed and I was still making connections in my family. I was still going to school, but I was pretty much isolating as much as I could on purpose. And on top of that, when you've had a traumatic event, people leave you alone. People are a little afraid.
Yeah.
They don't want to trigger you. They're really kind with their words and they're walking on eggshells with you. So yeah. I used that to my advantage for a long time. And that's part of one of the things that when I got to college, I had somebody tell me that I liked being a victim. And I got very angry because that's like, who are you to tell me anything about my victimhood?
Yeah.
But I sat with that. And what I realized was that what he meant was there was something that I was gaining from stating I was a victim. And when I sat with that, I realized exactly what I was gaining. People were leaving me alone. And that's what I wanted. But I decided that there had to be a better way for me to communicate that with people instead of just allowing them to, you know, put up for me to continue to stay behind the wall. So yeah. I switched my mentality from one of victimhood to one of survivorship. And in doing so, two things happened. Number one, I could no longer blame my trauma. I couldn't say, well, I reacted poorly because my mother traumatized me as a child. I couldn't say that, well, because of the rape, I was, you know, triggered and acted badly. I had to take responsibility for the choices I was now making. Now, it doesn't mean I wasn't triggered, but I had to own how I reacted.
Yeah.
Nobody was standing behind me saying, this is how you're going to react. I consciously reacted in a way. I reacted poorly. I made bad decisions. And those decisions were mine to make. My mother wasn't standing beside me telling me what to do. I made those decisions. And what's amazing about being able to switch is that you become extremely empowered knowing that you can choose the trajectory of your life. And in making that one switch, I now regained my power to control how I moved forward in my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It sounds like what I'm hearing the most is just like, after it happened, you had this awareness that this was something major and that you needed help and that, but when you went to therapy and when you spoke about it, there was still sort of this disconnect between what really happened. Like you had support, you had, you know, your dad, you had your family, but there was this like, the separation between regular life and then like the trauma. And it sounds like what you learned how to do was bring the trauma into who you are and like come to that place of acceptance of like, this happened, but it doesn't have to keep me stuck in this mindset that is holding me back.
The only reason we stay stuck is because we allow the ego to keep us stuck. Mm-hmm. The moment we say, I am not going to allow my past to control my present. Don't worry about the future. The future will come. But we're just talking about the present moment.
Yeah.
In the present moment, what happened in the past has no bearing. How I choose to react, how I choose to respond is really where the power is. I choose to respond from a place of love, not from a place of fear. Mm. And that ultimately is the second major shift, is understanding that when the ego's in charge, we react fearfully.
Mm-hmm.
When we choose to respond from a place of love, when we choose to look and go inside and listen to our heart's voice, we respond completely differently. And it changes the course of our lives.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if you could just elaborate a little bit more on that, because I think, you know, you spoke about accountability, and I think that that is a huge shift we can all make to feeling more empowered and in control of our lives, and, you know, giving us that sense that we really can direct ourselves and lead ourselves where we want to go. But I think when we've experienced trauma, I'm wondering if you can speak to, like, how do you balance accountability and, like, taking that personal responsibility with self-compassion? And especially, you know, for someone like yourself who went through such an enormous traumatic event as a child who didn't know any better, like, what was that process for you like to take the steps as an adult to be accountable, but also to recognize, you know, this wasn't my fault, like, this happened to me? What advice would you have for someone who's navigating that today?
Two things. One, forgiveness, and two, personal boundaries. So let's speak about forgiveness. Forgiveness is not something we do for another person. Forgiveness is something we do for ourselves. So that old antidote is, you know, drinking the poison, thinking you're going to kill somebody else when ultimately it's hurting yourself. That's what non-forgiveness is. Mm-hmm. So forgiveness for me was twofold. I had to forgive my mother for allowing the events to occur.
Yeah.
And then I had to forgive myself for any blame, or because that whole thing where we have to go, why did this happen to me? What could I have done to prevent it? I was 11. You know, there wasn't anything I could do to have prevented it.
Right. Okay?
So that's when you're an adult looking back at it, you can clearly see that. But as a 12 or 13 or 14 year old, you can't, especially when your mother, who is an alcoholic, is blaming you. She would call me on the phone and blame me for her alcoholism, blame me for the reason my parents divorced, blamed me for why she continued drinking. So all of this in her eyes was my fault. So that was the second aspect of things is the blame. And when I got to the point where I realized I didn't do anything wrong, really, truly, I didn't do anything wrong. I couldn't not have prevented this in any way, shape, or form. So I need to be able to forgive her and forgive myself. Forgive myself for the fact that I spent so many years blaming and looking at other ways inward. I was blaming myself. I was looking at things from a different perspective. So in the forgiving process, and forgiveness is how you know you are healing. And it doesn't come easily. You start with a little bit here and a little bit there. And I forgive my mother for calling me up and berating me. You know, before you get to, I forgive my mother for allowing three men to rape me so she could have drugs. Okay. You have to build this forgiveness factor up. And then forgiving yourself. And forgiving yourself is a little easier because you're already inside your head. So because you're already inside your head, you can say, okay, well, I understand why I did this. And then you start looking at yourself with a compassionate eyes, and you start understanding that if you were somebody else, if you were your best friend, how would you talk to your best friend about this? Mm-hmm. And you, of course, wouldn't blame your best friend for any of the part that occurred to her. So why would you blame yourself? So it's being able to separate the two. The second one is personal boundaries. And that one's another hard one. For me, the personal boundaries was with my mother, because I grew up in an age where honor thy mother and thy father was really, really important.
Mm-hmm.
And I was 25 years old when I finally had somebody tell me, yes, you need to honor your mother and father, but honoring them does not mean that you allow them to hurt you. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, I was raised in the church. I was, you know, carrying Bibles around with me. Why didn't anybody else mention this aspect of honoring to me sooner? So when I understood that, then I started down the process of, okay, honoring her means that I do want to talk to her if she's sober. So that was the first boundary I placed. Mom, you can call me and I will speak with you, but you have to be sober. If you're not sober, I'm going to say, Mom, you're drinking, I can't talk to you, and hang up. It has nothing to do with me being dishonorable to you. It has to do with the fact that I'm honoring myself enough not to have you berate me when you do, because you're drunk. So The first couple of times she called drunk, I hung up and then I cried. That happened about 3 or 4 times. And then she quit calling me drunk. The boundary took hold. So learning to set those boundaries is something that most people don't realize isn't about the other person.
Yeah.
It is self-care and self-love for ourselves. And those were my first baby steps, really and truly, in taking care of myself.
Yeah, I love that, because I think that's such a important shift, is like, we can honor others when we honor ourselves. And when we know ourselves and understand what makes us feel safe, and that we're worthy of setting boundaries that are going to protect us or allow us to have relationships that don't feel like they're hurting us. Like we have the power to do that. And like, how empowering is that to look at those situations from that point of view of like, okay, what can I do to change this dynamic? I don't like when my mom calls me drunk. Like, I have power to do that versus I'm obligated to just put up with this treatment that doesn't feel good and isn't respectful either.
Right.
So we talked about this theme a little bit of just like seeing things from a different perspective. And I know we talked in our first conversation around like the message of just, it doesn't have to be like this. Like, we can change things. What other methods did you use when you did start to look within and were in a place to start rewiring some of these thought patterns? Like, what other tools or tactic did you use to help you in that process?
The biggest one is reframing. And interestingly enough, I'm writing in my book and I'm talking about what I'm doing, and I didn't realize reframing actually is a real psychological tool that therapists use to help people change their perspective. And all it is being able to look at a situation and determine, okay, how can I see this differently? Right now, I am seeing that I'm a control freak. I need to stay in control. Everything needs to be in their place. And what other people see is that I'm extremely well organized. So that different perspective can be a positive thing and a negative thing, depending on how you're choosing it. My family thinks that I'm a control freak, so that's negative in their standpoint. But in my work life, being well organized is an extremely positive thing to have. So that perspective, it can be changed. The main thing with reframing is that we always are telling ourselves stories. So we have that inner critic, we have that inner voice, and a lot of times it's very negative. So one of the things that the negative tapes played, my mother had told me when I was young, and then continually through my life, that if I was dropped into the woods, I would perish. I was not a survivor at all. And I spent years in the woods hiking. I learned how to take care of myself, all because of that one statement. Yeah. Now, the reality is, if she was dropped in the woods, she could not fend for herself. So part of that is she deflecting? Is she saying, you know, what is it that she's doing? But that tape played in my head for years. And what I used to change that tape was to realize that, number one, her statement was about her, not about me. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the big tools that most of us don't realize, is those words that others say to us isn't about us at all. It's about them.
Yeah.
Even when we're upset at somebody and we use harsh words, it's not about them. We're reflecting something. We're responding. We're reacting to something that they said that triggered us. So whatever it is, it's about who said it. So it wasn't about me. It was about her. And number two, I ended up learning survival skills because of that. So I ended up using it in a positive way. So I need to now realize that I can survive in the woods.
Yeah.
I would be okay. And start reframing and realizing that I'm the one turning that tape on. My mother passed almost 10 years ago. So if that tape comes on, I turned it on, and therefore I can turn it off.
Yeah.
Or I can press re-record and re-record over it. So something new. And that's where the self-talk and the self-love comes in, is understanding that those things that we say inside our head can be changed. And reframing is the way to do it. Even if it's something, you know, I don't talk about failures or mistakes. I talk about missteps because we're always moving forward. Even if we take a misstep, it's still a forward movement. Maybe it's lateral, but it's still, we're not going backwards because you can't go backwards. That's the thing about life. You can't go backwards. So you're always moving forward. And in taking those missteps, what lesson did I learn here? I took this misstep. Obviously, I needed to take this misstep. Otherwise, I wouldn't have done it. What is it that I'm supposed to learn here? Every encounter that we have with another, every misstep that we take is meant for us to learn something. And if we look for the lesson, then everything has a purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the analogy about the tape of, we can repeat the tape, we can record over it. We can think of it like that, because I think what can be most challenging is just how ingrained those stories or those beliefs become. And it's like almost second nature that something happens and we just go back to that tape that we're used to. How did you learn to distance yourself from it and see it as this like separate thing outside of you versus just, you know, instantly going and judging yourself or believing and buying into what you were told?
Part of it was, most of the recordings in our head came from some sort, normally something that happened in childhood. And it's something that we ended up allowing to become a defense mechanism. And what I mean by that, in the book, I talk about the last thing my dad said to me before we went to visit my mother in New Mexico. He lifted up my chin and told me to take care of my baby sister. Nothing out of the ordinary. And my baby sister is 11 months younger to the day than I am. Okay. So I was 11, she was 10. And through all of the trauma, when my sister started crying after my mother put the suitcases out, that tape went on, take care of your baby sister. That for me became a life-saving event, that tape, because now I wasn't worried about me. I was going to do what was in the best interest of Tammy. And so that's what I did. Now, it became a problem in that when she's 35 and she's calling me and I'm still taking care of my baby sister. So she was 35 that I realized this is wrong.
Yeah.
I shouldn't be doing this anymore. At some point, she's going to have to stand up on her own 2 feet because I won't be here to help her.
Right.
So she needs to figure it out. I can be a safety net, but she needs to figure it out. So that was the biggest wake up call, was when I realized, okay, these tapes that I automatically respond to may have been a good thing at some point in time, but now they're hurting me. They're causing problems.
I think that's so important to mention, because so often I do this too, of like, you know, you think of the automatic responses and like our coping mechanisms. We think of them more from that side of like, they're like limiting beliefs or something that, you know, held us back or something that we look at it more in that negative way versus sort of like what we think of the ego. Like it's actually there to keep us alive and help us survive. And it's not as black and white as that. There is good and bad to all those things.
The ego, part of the issue with the ego in today's world is that it can't tell the difference between what we see on television, what we see on social media, what we watch in the news. It can't tell the difference between that and what's real. So when we feed ourselves a bunch of violence in a movie, and you are watching a movie and there's a gang war going on between the Hispanics and the Asians, and then you're walking down the street and you see a bunch of Hispanic and Asian kids, you start having an angst. Your ego's like, hey, wait a second. And the reality is you fed your ego that. It is now saying, you were watching this, we know it was bad, and now this is real life, it's bad too, right? So we feed ourselves all these things, and our ego has to at some point realize, and it can't. It doesn't know the difference between reality and a movie. We have to determine and tell it what's real. So one of the things that happens with, you know, I was raped by three Hispanic men, and my angst for Hispanic men when I see them can be quite strong at times. But over the years, I've worked with a lot of Hispanic men. They're lovely people. They're very caring and loving people. And I've had more positive experiences than negative experience with Hispanic men. But if I pay attention to what I'm feeding my ego, if I'm watching nice, compassionate, loving stories, then that's what I'm going to see in the world. We focus on the negative because we feed ourselves that negative. But the reality is, if you walk down any street in any town, you're going to see everyday people opening the doors for one another. Somebody drops something, everybody's trying to pick it up. You know, we're loving, compassionate creatures. That is our core nature. And all this angst that we have is because we fed our ego something it shouldn't have been fed.
Yeah, we have to really kind of learn to check ourselves of like, where is this coming from? And is this actually true? Or is this an association that I saw somewhere? I'd love to hear a little bit about your book, Raven, Transcending Fear, and tell us about the process and what the book's about.
I was always been asked if I was ever going to write my story. And it wasn't just no, it was hell no, I wasn't going to do it. And then in 2018, I became pregnant with a book. It was the year I turned 50, coincidentally. I became pregnant with a book. And the title came to me, and then I wrote a poem, which are the stanzas are throughout the book. And I sat down at the computer. I was working 50 hours a week. So this was at night and weekends, and this book poured out of me. And when I say poured out of me, I didn't have an outline. I didn't do all those things that you're supposed to do when you write. I just sat down and typed, and it just poured out of me. 9 months later, I had a rough draft, and then I went through the publishing and editing and all that stuff. Raven Transcending Fear is my story about how I went through the trauma and came out on the other side, becoming my authentic self. And like I said, we start out being authentic, and then we get garbly gooped, and then we have to become authentic again. And who I am now is exactly who I was before I was 10 years old. And who I am now with you, I'm the same with my husband, I'm the same with my son. There is no difference in me and how I associate with others. So becoming your authentic self is a transcending process to overcome the egoic mind, overcome the egoic fears, because the ego is what causes us to fear. And when you transcend from fear to love, is a very, very powerful process. And in the Course of Miracles, that's what a miracle is defined as, being able to go from fear to love, seeing the situation instead of fearfully from a loving perspective. And that's a miracle according to the Course of Miracles.
It's funny because I've talked to a few people now who've said that same, that feeling of just like the book just pours out of you when you're ready to tell your story. And it gives me a lot of hope, and it lets me relax. So I think one day I would love to write a book, but the thought of like the process seems so daunting. But I think it's important for us to tell our stories. And I think also it's interesting how your mindset can, you know, it's so flipped from like, I'll never write this to I have to do this.
And again, that's spirit. That's our soul. When our purpose and our talents, our natural innate talents collide, that's our sole purpose. That's our mission in life. And through the writing of the book, several things happened. But the main thing is all the time that I've spent in corporate, I went out of corporate so badly. And the book is allowing me to transition out and to do what I passionately want to do, which is help people overcome their fears and limiting beliefs.
Yeah, I love that. If you were to give like one piece of advice to someone listening who may see themselves a little bit in your story and are just starting their path to switching their perspective, what's that main piece of advice that you'd provide?
Get quiet. And what I mean by that is our soul has all the answers we will ever need. But to be able to hear our soul, we have to get quiet. And getting quiet is really hard for people. And it means, number one, you have to be alone. You can't be quiet mm-hmm. in a group of people. So you have to get alone. And a lot of time, there's the opposite of what I did, which was go inside and stay away from everybody, is to go and have hundreds and thousands of friends so that you don't have to go inside.
Yeah.
That deflection. So it's getting by yourself, getting quiet, and learning to listen to what the soul is whispering to you. And when you're able to do that, you can do that through meditation, through prayer, through journaling. There's all kinds of ways to do that. But when you do, you're reconnecting your soul to the divine or to the universe, whatever you want to call that. But there is a universe, from a scientific perspective, it is energy. So we're yeah. reconnecting with that one universal energy that has all the answers, and all the answers are downloaded into us immediately when we ask the question. But we have to get quiet to be able to do that and to hear the whispers of our heart. And when we do that, lots of things happened. One of them is we learn to love ourselves. We learn to see with compassionate eyes. We learned what our purpose is. We learn who we really are. And then the amazing thing is when we get to that place and we start being who we really are, if you ask anybody on the planet, do you want me to be real or fake? Everybody wants you to be real. And yet we all wear masks and we all play these roles instead of being who we really are. And that's not what people want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I love that. I think that's such great advice. And to your point, can be really hard. So it takes practice. And don't be discouraged if it doesn't come easily right away, because it's not ingrained in us, you know?
Right. I could always pray. So I wouldn't say raised in the church, but I was always connected to God as a small child. So I could pray. And God and I argued for years. When I came back from New Mexico when I was 11, God and I fought. Mm-hmm. I had very stern conversations with God after all of that. But yeah. Over time, I tried to learn to meditate. And meditation did not come for me. I started meditating, I want to say tried, in about 2011. 2012, Oprah Winfrey and Deepak Chopra came out with a 21-day meditation. And I've done every single 21-day meditation they've ever done since it came out in 2012. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until 2014, I had started doing yoga. And 6 months into doing yoga, during Shavasana, I had, which is corpse pose at the end of a 45-minute round of yoga, where you're tired.
Yeah.
I'm laying there and I realize there's no thoughts in my head. What's up with that? My chatter in my head was constant. So 6 months into yoga, I finally realized, this is meditation. I did it. I got there. And I continued yoga for another 6 months just to make sure I got it. And now I can do it anywhere. So mm-hmm. I still pray. I still meditate. I journal 3 pages every morning. I write I am statements. I do affirmations. I have the first hour of my day is Terry time. It is time for me to get grounded, to be thankful for everything that has occurred, everything that I'm planning. And then I end my journaling with and my I am statements with, I am a master of time. I am in a constant flow state. And I will accomplish all I'm supposed to do today. So that at the end of the day, when my to-do list isn't complete, I knew that I wasn't going to get everything done because I got accomplished what I was meant to do today.
Yeah, that's so important, because I feel like if you, we have to, you know, give ourselves that room and that space to have what we do in a day be enough and like walk away and let ourselves rest. And I think setting ourselves up, like, I love that Terry time in the morning. Mm-hmm. I think that's so important to really set the tone on how you go into your day and allow you to keep those themes mm-hmm. with you throughout. So yeah, thank you for sharing all of that. And where can people connect with you online and social media?
The best way for people to connect is at terrykozlowski.com. I have a podcast called Soul Solutions. So you can go to soulsolutionspodcast.com. I'm on all the podcast stations. And then of course, raventranscendingfear.com is where you can get my book. It's also on Amazon. And those are the best ways to get a hold of me. I am on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn. I'm everywhere. And I have a YouTube channel now. So I am everywhere. But the best way is terrykozlowski.com and you can find me.
Perfect. Well, definitely check out Terry's social media and her book. And thank you so much for your time today, Terry. It was great to chat with you. And thanks for being so vulnerable and sharing your story.
I enjoyed the time with you, Catherine. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of It's Okay to Love Yourself. You can follow along with us on social media on Instagram at It's Okay to Love Yourself. And thanks again for tuning in.